overview of KUA's financial statement. I think Kevin's going to be leading us in that. Thank you, Kevin, if you want to proceed.
Thank you. Chair, we are glad you're here today. We realize this is an hour early than what you typically are here, but at your suggestion, we wanted to provide you today a little deeper dive into what you see in your packets on a quarterly basis in financial statements. And we thought we would spend, we have about 30 minutes of presentation material ready, which would allow us ample time for questions if you had them. And we want to encourage you that if you do have questions, feel free to interrupt us at any point in time. We'll be happy to answer those. Today I will be speaking for the first part of our presentation to go over the financial statements. Then after that, Barbara Gonzalez, a financial analyst here at KUA, is going to come up and share with you a couple things. And then finally, Charles Lee will be up, who you're all familiar with, and he'll come up and share a few things as well. And I'll get into some more detail in that as we move forward. So with your permission, let's jump right into the presentation. This is an outline of what we'll be talking about today. The first part, the overview of the quarterly financial packet, is what I'll be discussing for my portion. And after that, I'm going to ask Barbara to come up, and she's going to share with you some of the key expense variations that you see from time to time when you look at the financials. And then after that, you're going to see the cost of power adjustment portion presented by Charles Lee. When we talked to you last time, we had some discussions with a few of the board members, and you had questions about some of the nature of the things we show you, some questions about why there are variations in some of the bigger components that you see in the financial statements. And so I wanted to spend a little time today talking about those items that comprise the largest dollar volume of the financial statements, mainly things like the fuel and purchase power expenses, and then also the COPA, or the cost of power adjustment. And we want to talk about those in more detail because they're somewhat more complex items, but they do comprise a significant portion of the total budget. So moving ahead to the piece that we'll look at first, every quarter in your packets, what you typically see is this same arrangement of documents. The very first thing you see is a fiscal year 2017 megawatt hour sales graph, or for that particular year, that respective year. And you will see the same items presented to you in this basis. And we do that for a couple of reasons. For historicity and for comparability, we have third parties who rely on the financial statements of KUA. And so we try to be consistent in the presentation of that information to you. Nonetheless, because we've realized over time that some of the titles to the columns can be somewhat confusing and even misleading, we wanted to change that to make it a little more clear to you and to us and to other users of the financial statements. And so you may see some columnar changes to those titles to that effect. And so we'll move ahead and showing you in sort of detail what you can expect to see in this packet that you receive every quarter. The first thing, again, the sales graph. And as we move ahead, this is basically a 10-year look back of the megawatt hour sales for the past 10 years.
Kevin, yes, just a moment, please. Kathleen was the board member that specifically asked for this.
Yes, ma'am.
And she's running late. Ethel said she'll be here in 2 minutes. Do you want to kind of
pause a little bit?
Pause.
Absolutely.
Until she gets here.
Yes, ma'am. Happy to do that.
Since
Thank you.
Is 2 minutes out.
Are we in recess?
We can recess.
Five minute
recess. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Director. With your permission, I'll step back just one slide to outline what we'll talk about today. We will be talking about the quarterly financial packet that you receive, going into some detail about what it is that's actually in that packet that you look at. We'll look at some key expense variations that Barbara Gonzalez will review with you for the purchase power, and then we'll look at the COPA, the cost of power adjustment that Charles Lee will overview with you as well. So moving ahead, what you see in your packet every month, and we do encourage questions, by the way, if you have them along the way, is the first graph that we present to you, or the first piece of information that we present to you. And this is basically a 10-year look back of how our megawatt sales have done, or megawatt hour sales have done over these 10-year period. And you can see the pattern of growth, and we sort of present this to you just as an overview of how sales are doing compared to the projected values that we have for the current year. As our year is completed, you see all 12 months on the dotted line projection, and you can see that on this first
right.
Presentation.
The
second item we give to you is really a couple of things. It's about three different documents, and what these are different variations of the budget to actual comparisons. And because they all tend to follow the same format, I wanted to provide
you... Excuse me, but we've got some conversations we're hearing other than him.
Okay. Sorry.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have several documents here that show budget to actual recap, and I wanted to, because of the formatting being similar across all three of these comparisons, I wanted to go into some detail about what that format is. It's basically a statement of revenues, expenses, and changes in net position, which is really a fancy way of saying an income statement. And we historically know that as such. But for our accounting purposes, that's what it's deemed to be called. And you will see these same major components in every presentation of that document. And so I want to go into a little bit of detail of what those components are in that document. We start with operating revenue, which, as you would expect, is the majority of our metered, is all of our metered sales, the lease revenue that's associated with the lease that we have with the plant, the cost of power adjustment, and the rate stabilization. So those all go into the operating revenue number that you see at the top. Then we add in, or deduct rather, the fuel and purchase power expenses, and that's the cost, as you would see there, of the ARP, bulk system rate stabilization that we might use to offset that expense to some degree, and any other ancillary power that we might need to make to provide power to our customers. When you subtract those from one another, you get the line item called operating revenue less fuel and purchase power, which is sort of an obvious answer. Below that, departmental O&M, and this is the thing that you're used to seeing during budget, where each department gets up here and presents to you, here's our budget for the coming year. And so the departmental O&M component is exactly that, all the labor and non-labor costs associated with each department here at KUA. When you subtract that from the preceding number, you get net operating revenue. Then we go into some other things, deductions, depreciation, and the City of Kissimmee transfers. And again, these aren't all-inclusive to the right over here. I'm not showing you every single item. These are just the major pieces that you would see. So depreciation and the transfers to the City of Kissimmee comprise the largest bulk of those other operating expenses. And when you reduce that from the net operating revenue, you get net operating revenue less other operating expenses. And we're getting close to the bottom line. After that, we take away the interest, or we add the interest revenue and subtract debt service, which is the interest earnings that we have on all the KUA investments. And then we take away the debt service interest component as the expense that we paid out on our long service, or interest on our long service debt. And that gives you the interest revenue less debt service value. And then finally, we have the non-recurring items. And these are things that don't happen with great frequency, or they happen so irregularly that they deserve sort of a special nomenclature, a special place in the financial statement. And these are things that, like gains and losses on extinguishment of debt and things of that nature. So we reduce that from the previous number, or deduct it rather, and then we end up with, voila, change in net position or net income. And so it's a very convoluted process to get there, but it's necessary to get us to the value that we need to get. But that is all the revenues and expenses of the utility, and that's what you see in these next few comparative slides. So in that format, the first thing we show you is a statement of revenue, expenses, changes in net position, or income statement. And we compare in this first slide you see, or the first document that you receive, the annual budgeted amount that you saw at budget time with any amended annual budget amount. Now, it happens very infrequently, but what may happen during the course of the year is there may be a modification to that budget. You may decide we want to move numbers around, or move budget, increase the budget. And when that happens, we amend the budget through a formal process with you, the board. And so what this first slide shows you is just what the original budget was, and then any modifications that we may have made and the result of that. And that's compared on the income statement format that we just discussed. The next piece we look at is an income statement comparison of the most recent month's activities to the most recent month's budget. So in that same income statement format, what you see is the most recent month's budget, which is for this period that we're looking at here, would be the month of September. We've completed a whole year, but the most recent month is September, obviously, because that's the last month in the fiscal year. So you're going to see September's budget compared to September's actual numbers. Now, the two columns to the right of that are in dollar and percentage analytic comparison so that you can see the differences between those preceding two columns of budget to actual. And so those two columns spell out the numeric differences between the budget and the actual for that most recent month. The last piece of this particular section, in budget and actual comparison, is the income statement format, and we're comparing for you the most recent year-to-date or quarter-to-date budget to the most recent year-to-date or quarter-to-date actuals. So in the same income statement format, you will see the most recent year-to-date budget. And so here we've completed a full fiscal year, so you're seeing a full 12 months worth of the budget compared to a full 12 months of actuals in the income statement. And again, the following two columns are showing you the analytical differences in dollars and percentages between those two columns. So we fairly well exhaust the budget to actual comparison and show that to you and slice it in several different ways so that you can get a different take on how those numbers compare to one another. The next piece we do is the statement of net position. And this is, for some of you who are familiar with this, know this as the balance sheet. And this really shows us the entire asset or the financial position of the utility when it compares the assets to the liabilities plus owner's equity. And the way we arrive at that is, as you probably are aware, we show you the assets on one page. And again, these documents up on the screen are what you actually see in your packet. So we wanted you to be able to see right what we're talking about today with what is in your packet so that would give you a clear analogy to look at. And so the assets pieces are basically those items that the KUA can derive value from in the current period or in the future period. And that would include things like our cash balance at the bank and working reserve and working capital. It includes things like inventory. We keep about $6 million worth of hand of inventory at the warehouse on any given time. We also have the total designated assets, and these are the funds that you've set aside for specific purposes for the utility, things like the capital improvement fund, self-insurance, and those types of assets.
And those are restricted.
Those are restricted.
It can only be used for that.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And then we move into the rate stabilization portion, and we have two components of that, and Charles will get into that a little bit later. But we have a retail portion, which is what we use, keep in our bank here at KUA. But then there's the bulk system. That's the piece we call the FMPA rate stabilization. And that gets applied only to the bill that we get from FMPA for the ARP. And Charles will talk about that in a little bit, but that is the sole use of that particular stabilization fund, the bulk system rate stabilization. And then when you add all those components together, including our fixed assets, you get total assets of $447,455,801. Then consequently, as you would expect, we show you the liability side of the house. And this would include all those things that you'd expect to see on a typical balance sheet. And these are things like our liabilities for accounts and notes payable. And these are items that we've purchased but have not yet paid for. Then you'd have things like customer deposits. Our customer service group does a fantastic job managing these deposits, and to the extent that we've reduced our write-off significantly and been able to recover a large portion of that in the past few years because of our strong customer deposit program that we have. And you'll see reflected there the $13.8 million of deposits that we keep. Also, we have long-term debt, the liabilities that we have there that we'll be paying off in the next few years per your direction. And then that gives you the total liabilities. Added to the total net position, which as you've historically probably understood to be the equity piece of a balance sheet, assets plus liabilities, assets equals liabilities plus owner's equity, that's the final piece of the puzzle. And when you add the total liabilities to the total net position, it's not reflected in the total here, but that totals out, and I can promise you it does, because one thing I do every month is make sure the balance sheet balances, that those two items balance to the assets on the preceding page. The comparative statement of revenues and expenses is the next thing, and this is probably the biggest, most cumbersome, comprehensive piece that we show you in the packet every quarter. And again, you're going to see a familiarity here. This is that income statement format that you've at this point become familiar with. And what we're showing you is the most recent year-to-date actuals with the preceding 2 years' actuals. So you might remember a few pages back, we're looking at budget to actual. Now we're showing you actuals to actuals, and we're comparing how this year in 2017, the most recent year, which here we'd have a full year's worth of information, compares to the preceding 2 years, and in this instance, that'd be 2016 and 2015. The metrics to the right compare the 17 to the 16. It compares the two most recent years, and that's the analysis that you see to the right. So we're showing you actuals to actuals here, but in that same pro format that you've grown accustomed to with the income statement.
Are these actual numbers?
Those are actual numbers in this packet, yes, ma'am. The final piece that I'll talk about today before Barbara comes up to talk about the ARP project, and this is the last thing that you see in the packet before you see the presentation, is the investment inventory summary. And I won't spend a great deal of time here because we do go into this piece in the presentation that you see when we present the financials to you. But these are the graphs and slides that you will see in this part of the packet, which basically just shows you the composition and the performance of KUA's investments. And that just shows you how we've invested your monies and the return on that money that we've received thus far. And at this point, if you have no questions about that piece, I'm going to turn it over to Barbara to share with you about the ARP.
Are there any questions?
No. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin.
Good afternoon, members of the board. As Kevin mentioned, I'm Barbara Gonzalez with the Finance and Administration Department, and I'll be speaking to you this afternoon regarding the All Requirements Project. FMPA's All Requirements Project is made up of 13 members, including KUA. Through the project, FMPA provides for the full power supply needs of its members. KUA is the largest member of the project, paying approximately 28% of the total project cost. One of the key benefits for the members of the project is that it allows them to leverage economies of scale in power generation and related services, which helps utilities provide reliable and affordable power to their communities. Another benefit is that it allows the members to pool generation resources. The ARP project has ownership in 5 plants throughout the state, 3 of which are fully owned and operated by the ARP, and 2 in which we retain a minority ownership. In addition, we also have purchase power agreements in place, which are a little more costly but less risky in that we only pay for the power that we require. The ARP also has a diversified fuel portfolio. While we are 85% reliant on natural gas, we do maintain diversity with ownerships in coal, nuclear, and renewables in the event that our natural gas plants should become unavailable or uneconomical to run. In previous meetings, there were some questions surrounding the budget-to-actual variances for the ARP. And so I'm going to attempt to provide a little more detail on what drives some of those variances. With a budget of over $118 million, the ARP is easily KUA's largest expense, accounting for over 60% of total operating expenses. There are 2 major components of the ARP bill. The first component is demand. And in demand charges, we see that in 2017, we had a variance of approximately $8.3 million. That was primarily due to the shifting of O&M costs from the demand charges component of the bill to the energy charges component. In addition, KUA was also able to realize some savings in due to system efficiencies, which means that the KUA system peaked at a different time than the ARP system as a whole peaked, and that results in cost savings. The second major component of the bill is energy charges, and we see a variance there of $4.8 million. This is a component of the bill where we tend to see the biggest fluctuation in costs, and that is because this is where all the fuel costs reside. And as we saw in 2017, the cost of natural gas was quite a bit higher than was anticipated. So I just want to point out one difference in the comparison of the numbers that we'll be looking at and then this slide and all the slides going forward. In the previous slide, we were looking at a budget to actual comparison for 2017. Here, we'll be looking at a comparison of 2016 actuals to 2017 actuals. So I've shown you the components of the ARP bill, and here we have our actual KWH sales, which is the determinant for how we are billed. In 2016 and 2017, our sales were nearly identical. In fact, less than 0.5% different. Now, in 2017, we did experience substantial customer growth, adding nearly 2,000 customers. However, even with that substantial growth, our sales in 2017 did not exceed our 2016 sales, and that was due to the weather. The 2016 summer was one of the hottest recorded in the last 30 years. Here we have our actual energy charge for 2016 compared to 2017. As the board noted in previous meetings, we did see quite a fluctuation in these charges year over year. As a reminder, the project is reliant on natural gas, approximately 85%. And so that exposes us to high volatility in cost. In 2016, the prices of natural gas were driven down due to a warm winter, which created high reserves. Then when we moved into 2017, we saw that shift with an increase in the use of natural gas. That increase caused the demand to encroach on the supplies, subsequently driving the prices of natural gas up. In addition, there's one other component that is factored into the energy charge, and that is a working capital requirement. The working capital requirement is a 60-day collection for projected fuel and other variable costs for the project. And those costs can fluctuate from month to month depending on the projected fuel price as well as the accuracy of our projections. Lastly, we have the demand charges. Again, this is a comparison of actual 2016 to 2017. There was not a big fluctuation in the cost year over year here. In the demand charges, we basically seek to pay for our fixed cost. Now, while there are various components of the fixed cost, which you see over there on the right, the biggest piece of that is the debt service on the plants. And then one other component which drives the demand charge is load factor. Again, that is basically a measure of KUA's system efficiency versus the ARP system as a whole's efficiency. And so that measure will drive what share of the fixed cost KUA will be responsible for month to month. And unless there are any questions, I will hand it over to Charles Lee.
How is it decided how much we put into the fuel adjustment charge, or the fuel adjustment bucket that we have?
Are you referring to our monthly fuel adjustment?
Well, back to about the first slide that you had.
All the way back?
Yeah, back a couple more. I guess one more.
Here.
Okay, the $8 million that we have in rate stabilization with them, how is that amount decided?
Okay.
And now we have Charles Lee. That's a major portion of his presentation.
Okay.
Charles Lee, I'm with the financial analysis team. I did want to point out that Barbara is also with the financial analysis team, and she's been with us almost 12 years, and she works with fuel and purchase power invoices exclusively. She is Larry Mattern's ambassador with the power supply. And it's a lot of responsibility, that she does a terrific job with it. When you talk about overseeing fuel bills and payments for anywhere from $7 to $10 million a month, she does a terrific job with it. And since I'm recognizing the financial analysis team, Jeff Surratt over there put together almost all of the presentation, really jazzed it, did a nice job for us. And he is, I don't see Jeff Grace, he is the information technology ambassador, Jeff Grace, and he's been with us almost 10 years.
Got a lot of experience.
Let me get to my slide. Okay. Yeah. So we got a big challenge in front of us. We have a product, electricity. And the main component that Barbara is talking about is fuel, is hard to predict. And in addition, the consumers, the customers, that buy our product are influenced highly by weather. So we're trying to predict price of fuel and weather. That's a tall task. So how do utilities handle it? How does KUA handle it? We handle it. One of the ways we handle it is through our cost of power adjustment. This is our acronym, cost of power adjustment. You might be in other circles with other utilities, and they usually call it power cost adjustment. PCA is what they'll refer to it. So what is COPA? We have, with our electric rates filed with the Public Service Commission, we have assumed a certain amount of fuel built into our electric rates, about 9.2 cents we built into the fuel cost. When our fuel come in and they're less than 9.2 cents, that means we've overbilled the customer and there's going to be a credit that shows up on their bill. When the fuel invoices that come in are over the 9.2 cents, we've underbilled the customer and there's going to be a customer charge. So why do we have it? As discussed before, it is a timely adjustment for fuel. There's cost of fuel changes real frequently, even hourly, and some of the changes can be very significant. And there's timing differences too. So customers are using the product before they actually pay for it, and then we're sending a bill out to the customers before we even receive the bill. We don't receive the bill till the following month. KUA chooses to make our power cost adjustment on a monthly basis. Not all utilities choose to do that. Some utilities do it quarterly, some semi-annual, some do it once a year, or some do it whenever is appropriate. I prefer us doing it monthly, and the biggest reason, if I could just explain this in words, is let's say Barbara said our fuel bill is roughly $120 million a year. And that fuel bill could easily fluctuate up to $130 million. So if we only changed our fuel whenever it needed changes or once a year, then the following year we've undercollected by $10 million. So then we would have to set our rates for not only the $130 million, but that $10 million we didn't collect the prior year. So by collecting it monthly, more frequently, it's fairer to us and it's fairer to the customer. And to show this as an example, our normal rate change calendar, we haven't had a rate brought to this board in a little bit, but a normal rate change calendar, we would bring you the rate study. And let's say the first month, January, we'd have a board meeting, and you would authorize it, us to send it to the Public Service Commission. Customers would be notified of the change during the next month and a half. We would advertise for this 10 days prior to the public hearing. We'd have the public hearing, and if okay to the public hearing, the rates would go into effect in June. That's a six-month span. And our mechanism filed with the PSC, the calculation that's in your packet every month, authorizes us to change it every month. So this is what you see in your packet every month, and we won't go into the numbers on this slide, but I did conceptually just, it's not as intimidating as it looks. Really, all we're doing on this first slide is we're taking a three-month average of our fuel bills, and on the right-hand side of it, we're looking at our balance that we over or under collected, and we take 25% of that. So this is the COPA calculation on the first slide. The second slide is just showing you the expenses that go into that calculation. And if you look down at that bottom number, that $7.3 million, Barbara reviewed and authorized the wire to go out to pay $7.3 million last month. So now we will go on into the detail a little bit, and hopefully I'll answer your question about the rate stabilization. We take our fuel expenses for the first 3 months, and I look back 1 month, and this is the calculation that I just performed for the December bills. So I look back at September's invoices, and I looked at the invoices that just came in for October. I'm going to project November, and I'm going to look at the balance. What are we over or under collecting? Then I'll look at the corresponding energy sales and divide one into the other, and that'll give me on line three, that'll give me a cost per kWh. You can see in September, it's about 6 cents, 5.5 cents, and 7 cents. That's a big fluctuation month to month. Then the 9.2 cents that I discussed a little earlier, that's what we've billed the customer in their bill. We take the difference between line four, what we billed the customer, and what our actual costs were, and that's the COPA calculation. We take an average of those 3 months and 25% of the balance. And that is the COPA for the month of December. Add in the energy conservation, and that becomes our acronym COPCA. That includes both. We're not done. The board has given us direction that we want to stay competitive in the bottom third or 33 percentile or below for our residential rate comparison on an annual average. This is, as of September, our last year's ranking. We were at two spots below at 28.9%. I want to point out that that's, in order to achieve that, we had an average rate of residential rate of $109.77. This year, so far, on what we call our strategic year is actually April through March. We've only got data in so far from April through September because there's a lag for getting the comparison of the rates in. And if you'll notice, we're also, coincidentally, also currently at the 28.9% position, but because of the fuel prices increases that Barbara discussed, the rate is $111.45 for that same position. Does that make sense? So it's a moving target. How do we make that decision? Finally, to your question on that. We calculate the residential bill with the 9.2 cents built into the energy charge there. That's $144.33. Then if, say, on example, on line five, if the fuel invoices come in and the rate's 7.7 cents, we deduct that from our net that against our base fuel. That's our COPCA. So that would give us a residential bill of $129.93. Well, we have a moving target, but right now the target is $111. So we would need $2 million that month to get to that target of 111. If correspondingly, we listed a couple of different examples. If it's at 6, we would need 1 million in rate stabilization last column. There, we don't need any rate stabilization. We come in right at $111. And here, we can actually put $500,000 back into the rate stabilization fund. What has that done to our rate stabilization funds? Last year, I'm going to try to use my laser pointer here. Okay. So last year we started out with about $58 million in rate stabilization monies. These two columns, the blue or green colored stacked bar, this is KUA held rate stabilization monies. We can use those stabilization monies for whatever direction the board gives us. Typically, that would be to get into the one-third percentile or AMI-type projects, substations that come up unexpectedly. The orange is the FMPA held. Last year, what we, as a team decided to do, we used from the FMPA held rate stabilization bucket first, and we've pretty much deleted that before we went to the KUA held. So at the end of last year, we had roughly $10 million less than we had prior year. Does that satisfy your question on the rate stabilization, Director?
I guess so. It's still... This has always been confusing to me.
It is confusing.
Well, you know that. You've tried to explain it to me before. And it, while I feel like we shouldn't deplete all of our reserve rate stabilization funds, but if I'm reading this right, we have depleted the ones we've got with FMPA, but actually ours have stayed the same or even gone up a little our internal ones.
That's correct. And there's we're constantly putting money into the rate stabilization
and taking it out. Yeah.
My discussion tonight is directed at the money we're taking out to address our rate comparability.
Right.
Just to reduce fuel costs.
Right.
And to continue with that thought, this shows the usage. Ours and FMPA through 15, 16 and part of 17. But it doesn't show the balances.
This is the balances.
Yeah.
This is the total balance in rate stabilization.
This is not the usage. Because my understanding was that the orange portion is what we use from FMPA to make up our 111 number. And a portion, the blue, is KUA's compensation. And the two of them together made up the balance needed to come up with the 111.
There's a couple things going on. It's a good observation. Yes, it is showing the usage because you see the orange disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's showing the usage for fuel related. Mm-hmm. It's also showing you some usage for fuel related from KUA help. But what you don't see is it's going up a little bit because we've also added in.
Mm-hmm. So how much we add in is dependent upon what?
It's dependent on a couple things. We draw it down when our general reserve fund dips below zero. We want to keep that at zero. When other projects come up, such as funding the AMI project, we use that to fund the AMI.
So this is not all rate stabilization. This is money usable for what it's deemed necessary for.
To stabilize.
This is all labeled rate stabilization funds.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The board can decide what they want to use the rate stabilization funds for.
And one way to stabilize the rates is what Charles just went through here, where you're adjusting for fuel cost variations from FMPA. Other ways of stabilizing the rates is if you have a big purchase instead of going out and bonding for it or paying for it directly out of rates, you take it out of rate stabilization and then it doesn't hit the rates because I think that's where AMI came from, right?
That's correct.
You funded AMI from rate stabilization so that the AMI could go in without affecting the rates, and you effectively stabilized the rates that way.
Another way of looking at it is rate stabilization comes from monies that these are revenues that we've earned from the customers, but instead of Kevin recognizing them on our income statement, we defer those. We put them aside instead of having a rate increase in the future and going through that six-month process and going back and forth with the customer's rate. We're trying to stabilize that. We give the customer one rate, and when the rate comes up and we need more money, we can go to this pot and get the money.
So when the cost of fuel goes up, we have to use our stabilization funds. When it goes down, we can add two.
Yes, ma'am.
So it's just a fluctuation every month, and of how much the fuel cost is how this goes up and down.
That's correct. And the green or the blue held doesn't necessarily have to be fuel related. It could be if some of our O&M expenses start outgrowing what we're pulling in from rates, we can pull from stabilization. It gives you a lot of flexibility.
But in any given month, we may be taking out and adding in at the same time, mightn't we?
We wouldn't do it in two steps. The net effect, we would do one or the other.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then annually, you're looking at your changes in net position, and you have certain things that you want to maintain via your financial criteria in terms of ratios. And if you got all them maintained and you still have some money left, that can go into rate stabilization and recognize those revenues later on. On the other hand, if you haven't achieved those ratios and you want to be able to achieve them, you can achieve them by then recognizing the revenues and taking it out of rate stabilization.
Exactly.
It It gives you a lot of abilities to stabilize things.
Without going into the market and bonding anything.
Exactly.
We loan it to ourselves. We loan it to ourselves. And
Or without raising the rates. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where the name came from.
Because when you go to the bond market, you're going to pay interest,
yes,
which is going to cost money. So
one last slide I've included. I hope this helps a little bit. So the three of us have...
Before we get off that, I'd like to say, and this happened pre-Kevin even, but you can remember, Charles, this is... KUA created this concept, took it to the bond market, got our bond covenants changed to enable us to do that, and now we have others that are looking and copying at this way of doing it. But we created this.
Exactly.
This concept.
Okay, because we've got a meeting in minutes, so.
Okay, last slide. This last slide hopefully explains some of the other explanations for variances that you see from your energy and demand charges. So if you look at the calendar year going across, this is our new fiscal year, the top fiscal year 18 goes from October of September. If you think about it, so the December sales that we're going to have this month, that load forecast was developed almost a year ago. And the fuel cost associated with that was developed during the budget in April. Also, the COPA that we're going to recover for December's to be billed was developed back in November. And the rate stabilization decision that we have to make to be in the ranking, we won't know where we rank until 2 months later in February. So it's not an exact science. And we try to position ourselves to be just under the 33%, but not too close to it. Well, that concludes the formal part of the presentation.
Thank you. That was very good. Very good. Thank you. Are there any questions?
Real quick. We should consider changing rate stabilization just to stabilization. Because it's the need for whatever need we have within KUA versus just the rate. So when I always heard rate until today, I thought it was exclusively for rates. And now I learned something today, which is good. So,
well, Director Ortega, technically it is only to stabilize rates, and that's all it's ever used for. It's just a question of, do you stabilize the rates by paying for something with cash as opposed to charging it to rates, or do you stabilize it by paying down the fuel
by paying course. Something else.
Okay. Very good.
These financial reports are long. If I had to take one or two items, line item, numbers, and the report, and say, okay, this is a good report, overview, bird's eye view, okay, this is going to be a good report just based on these three factors, what should I be looking for?
I would focus my attention on the presentation portion of the packet that goes along behind the financials. For those people who want to dig into the financials and look at the whole package, that's a great idea. But the presentation that you're going to see next hour is a very good high-level summary of, are we hitting all of our metrics? Are we achieving positive income according to the metrics you've laid down for us to achieve? And the presentation in the second part of that packet is a matter of maybe 10 slides that gives you a very good overview of how we did financially in that most recent fiscal period. And I will go over that with you.
Go over it in detail, and that's scheduled for the next
You will see that meeting. Next meeting, but that's where I would focus my
attention. Ray has something to ask.
I'm sorry.
Yes, I wanted to ask, the stack bar chart, does that relate to any of the figures that you've provided on the other statements?
The stack bar chart, meaning the rate stabilization?
Mm-hmm.
It's from, you would see that on the balance sheet, yes, ma'am. That total value, if you looked on the asset side of the balance sheet under the rate stabilization section, you would see those two numbers added. You'd see a small number for about $1 million for the bulk system rate stabilization. And then you'd see, I guess, about 38 or
Can you flip back to that slide to show everybody specifically where the line you're talking
here.
About?
It's going to be back to the
balance sheet.
Okay.
So it's on page 6.
Oh, okay. They can get to that quicker than I.
Is it on page 6?
Yes, the asset side of the balance sheet that we talked about. You'll see the two components toward the middle that say rate stabilization. There's a bulk, and then there's a retail. And those two values will add up to that ending value that you saw here. On, let me show you. I can get to that for you real quick. Those two numbers right there, if you can see it on the screen.
See where he's got highlighted.
$48 million, I apologize. I couldn't see the graph. Well, $48 million for the retail, and then almost $889,000, or roughly $1 million in the bulk. And you'd see that on the far right-hand column, the small orange piece, that's the 889, and then the bigger, the long blue piece on the far right, that for 17, that's going to be your retail.
And these numbers, the actual numbers that went into those bars that we were showing?
That's correct. Okay. And looking back, that's what you'd see every month in those financial statements.
Very good.
And it's always confusing to me why they're on the liability side, too. But I understand they're...
it's just an accounting entry we have to make.
I know. This,
well, if there's no other questions, meeting will be adjourned.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. It was a very good presentation. Yep. Welcome to the December 6th meeting of Kissimmee Utility Authority. Will you join me in pledging allegiance to the flag? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And to the republic which stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. We'll start with awards. APPA Excellence. I think, Chris, will you be taking this one, I think?
Yes, this is Chris Gent for the number one and number two. One from APPA and one from FMEA. Thank you, Chris.
Sure. Each year, the American Public Power Association, you can submit projects that you've done throughout the year in a variety of categories, including print and digital and video. And so we were able to take away three awards this year, which are up there in front of you. And so they were presented to KUA. On behalf of APPA, so I just wanted to bring them back and present them to the board. And also wanted to acknowledge Jeff Gray and his department, because one of those entries, if you remember last year, was the Mannequin Challenge with the Boys and Girls Club that won the top video for the United States. So that was a huge tribute, and the award will hang in their IT conference room for their contributions to that. So,
good job.
And the next award is the FMEA Building Strong Communities Award, and that is an award that we've received from Amy Zubeley at FMEA, and we submit a report every year of all the community service projects and hours and things that we do for the community for a fiscal year, and submit that, and we were one of, I believe, 12 utilities out of the 33 members of FMEA to receive that recognition, so I present that to you as well.
Thank you. You all do a wonderful job of putting us out in the community and helping the community.
Sure.
So thank you for that.
Yep.
Now we have your service awards.
Yes. And Jorge, are you here? Come on up, please.
Jorge is being recognized for 10 years of service.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
He's our instrument controls and electric technician in power supply. Yes. Congratulations, Jorge.
Thanks for that, Dickie.
Thank you, Amon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And let's see. I'm not sure how I can pronounce this. Letitia Rivera?
No.
We missed one. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Luis Lopez. Come on forward.
Lewis is also being recognized for 10 years of service. He is one of our facilities maintenance workers. Congratulations, Lewis.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. And as I was saying, I don't quite know who this person is, but congratulations.
Thank you. I'm here 10 years.
10 years!
I got news for you. I need to do a bigger dance than Letitia just did, because she's just what she does for all of us here is just, I mean, what everybody does for all of us and our customers, but personally, she does just a tremendous job, and I want to thank you for it.
Takes care of the directors, too.
Thank yes.
Thank you.
And 15 for, I can say this name, but I don't know if I recognize him either, Wilbur Hill.
Wilbur's being recognized for 15 years of service.
Don't recognize this. Yeah.
He's our Vice President of Community Services. Congratulations, Wilbur.
All right.
So glad you were here for 15 years.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
And next we have a very special award for Cheryl Brotzman. Cheryl. Woo! How are you doing, Cheryl?
I'm good. Thank you.
You know, I think a lot of you heard me say this, that anybody that's recognized as Employee of the Month anywhere is a very special award. But here at KUA, I think it's an even more exceptional award, because our Employees of the Month are selected by their fellow employees. So what an honor.
Thank you.
And let me tell you, Cheryl, what some of your fellow employees have said about you. Cheryl's dedication to KUA and its customers, both internal and external, shines brightly every day. Cheryl sets a high standard for her can-do attitude and instills others around her with the confidence to always strive to exceed our customers' expectations. Even in a very busy, fast-paced setting, Cheryl always seems to assist and effortlessly and accurately. She meets or exceeds the new requests of our customers. She is always striving to help, encourage, and educate, sharing her wealth of knowledge and information she imparts to customers as well as to other fellow colleagues here at KUA. Cheryl always raises the bar of excellence and reflects a great customer service work ethic. And it's you and employees like you that make KUA so great. And I can't think of anybody more capable and worthwhile representing all our employees this month as KUA's Employee of the Month. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Sure, I'd like to introduce you to our board of directors, beginning with our chairman, Jean Van Meter.
Cheryl, this trophy for you to put up in your office.
Thank you.
Congratulations, and thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
And Director...
Congratulations, Cheryl.
Thank you.
Here is David Pay, off for enjoyment, and some tickets at Pirate Island.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much, and can't beat that with a stick. And Director Manny Ortega.
Congratulations. Hi, thank you.
Free parking space. Free parking space. And a shirt.
It's handy, especially when it rains, right?
Thank you.
And Director Kathleen Thacker.
Congratulations. Thank you very much.
And I've got a check for you.
A little rub of the green. That's not bad at all, is it? Day off. And Director Ray Hempel.
Hi. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And we had a little gift packet for the Historical Society and some tickets to the Osceola Arts.
You're really going to enjoy them, I think.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Okay. And so... thank you very much.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We'll move on with the agenda. Hear the audience. This is the time when the audience can come forward to share with us their ideas, their hopefully not complaints, and their wonderful things that we do for them. Not seeing any, we'll go on to the consent agenda. I need a motion.
I move that we approve them.
We have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
We have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion passes unanimously. Okay, public hearing, there's none. Now we have a presentation from Tammy Douglas with Help Now of Osceola. Tammy, would you like to come up and address us, please?
Yes, we have the Executive Director for Help Now, Tammy Douglas, and this is a series of presentations that the board has requested for any sponsorships that come to KUA but are below the board approval level. This is a way for you to kind of hear what is going on with those organizations. So, Tammy.
Thank you. So today I brought with me just a real quick slideshow for you to take a look at, and then I'll share a few words. Back to our... Those of us that were at the Lobster Fest, it was wonderful.
Wonderful, sure. Yeah.
Great presentation. We were there, I think we had two tables, so.
Can we go to full screen, John, please? So while you're out there in the darkness, I'm praying you'll remember you were made to shine. You were made for life. Even if you've lost your way, turn and you will hear love say, you were made for more. Child of everlasting light, made to blaze away the night. So baby, burn bright. Burn bright. You can rise up from the ashes, make something beautiful of all the broken pieces. And I'm believing you'll come around in into the arms of Jesus. You were made to shine. You were made for life. Even if you've lost your way, turn and you will hear. You were made for more, so much more. Child of everlasting light, made to blaze away the night. So baby, burn bright. Burn bright.
Thank you, Tammy. So I know that you all are pretty familiar with Hope Now. You've been supporting us for many years, and I cannot thank you enough for that continued support. We're able to do so many things good for survivors to support them and provide safety for them in this community with your support. I always like to mention that the unrestricted revenue that we get from sponsorships such as KUAs allow us to draw down federal dollars to provide the many services that we offer. A lot of people think of Help Now synonymous with just the shelter, but our organization is a change agent organization. And so we're really working in our community to stop the violence that is perpetuated through domestic violence and the acceptance of that through systems change and social change. So as you saw on that last slide, we've been able to include three new programs this year that we're very, very proud of. We're partnering with the Council on Aging, the Sheriff's Office, the State's Attorney's Office to do an elder abuse project. We've also been able to hire two attorneys to represent survivors in court when they're applying for injunctions for safety. And then we've also added a new project for economic empowerment because economic abuse is very, very devastating to survivors of domestic violence who wish to leave a dangerous relationship. It's very difficult to bring a testimonial with me to this board meeting, so I thought if I may indulge you in reading a letter from a survivor that I really recently received, and it spoke volumes to me, and I hope it will for you as well. Hi, my name is Brandy, and I am who I am today in many ways, and I want to thank Help Now, specifically TG and Michelle. Those were the advocates that she worked with. Everyone was so amazing to me when I came to you for help. You gave me hope when I had none, came to court appearances with me, and just listening when I felt like I had no one. I had an amazing support system of family and friends, but none of them really understood what I was saying or what I was going through. Help Now was literally life-changing for me and my two little boys. The injunction is still in place until 2028, and if I didn't have my two life real guardian angels by my side, I simply wouldn't have been strong enough to make it through that whole process. I probably should have sent this years ago, but if I'm being honest, now is when I feel strong enough, mentally and emotionally, to give back and maybe to try and help other women who need it. I'd love to pay it forward. Lord knows the emails and messages that I get from Help Now on a regular basis and the advocates give me the boost I need to remember who I am now and not to let myself slip back into who I was, who he manipulated me into being. I am now strong and proud of the woman and the mother I've grown to be. From the bottom of my once shattered and broken heart, I thank all of you ladies for everything you do, that which is acknowledged, and also the small things that maybe you think go unnoticed. They don't. They make a difference. You all make a difference. The world is a better place because of all you and all you do. I can definitely promise that my world is a better place because of all of you, and I've broken the cycle. My boys will be respectful gentlemen because all of you made me strong enough to raise them right. Sorry, I know I'm rambling a little bit here, but I just can't seem to find the right words I'm looking for because words just aren't enough. But thank you.
Nice. And
so those sorts of words back to us years later are very meaningful, and I hope that you can hear it's a cycle. And that the services that we're working to provide are life-saving services, not just for the individual who's experienced that violent behavior and that abuse, but also for the children that are in the wake of that path and trying to help raise up a new and healthy generation of respectful people entering healthy relationships. Thank you so much again for your support.
Thank you, Tammy.
Thank
and
you.
As a board member for many, many years of Help Now, we're so lucky to have this woman. I get emotional because I know what she does for all these women and men, actually, that we have men that come in as abused as partners. So thank you, Tammy, for everything you do. Jim?
Madam Chairperson, I'd like to share with everyone some facts that you may not be aware of, that KUA has had long, long historical ties with Help Now, beginning with the founder of Help Now, Marie Thomas, who founded this as a project for junior women years ago. Junior women's had a de facto auxiliary with the husbands of junior women's, which included Marie's husband, who was one of our power plant, supervisor of our power plant mechanics, Dave Thomas. And I know he was very active in that because I was in the auxiliary, too, because my wife was a junior woman. And Marie not only started that, but she also brought my wife into the board in one of those early boards and to serve on Help Now. So KUA has had a lot of long personal ties to Help Now because it's such a wonderful organization and does so many great things for a very needed cause. Yes. Thank you.
Well, thank you all for everything you do, not only for Help Now, but for this entire community. You are omnipresent in this community doing amazing things, so thank you.
Thank you. Thank you myself. Okay, we'll go to old business. I think Jake Williams is here. Larry, did you want to introduce this subject, and
why don't you start with the recommendation we have and then turn it over to Jake to explain what brought us to that recommendation, okay? Is that that reasonable?
That is reasonable. Good evening, everyone. And, forward to that. Jacob will take you back, because the last slide is our recommendation from... Okay, okay, we'll figure this thing out. Actually, the recommendation is the one that's in your packet, because we actually call them out by the names of the resolutions. So the recommendation in your package that has the numbers of the resolutions on will be the recommendation from us. I thought that slide was corrected.
Did you want me to read that for everybody, or is everybody there? It is right there. Very good.
Yeah, staff recommends that the board adopt resolution 1702, 1703, 1704, 1705, which provide for one, consents and waivers to release the city of Vero Beach from FMPA power supply projects, contracts, and two, consents to the FMPA ARP to assume the city of Vero Beach, St. Lucie, Stanton, and Stanton 2 project entitlements.
Okay.
So that's the resolution. Now, if you saw there was a lot of paperwork, just really quick, all the paperwork you have, I'd like to thank Margie Bowles, Jennifer Gonzalez, and Letitia Rivera, which, you know, they did a lot of work putting it together. Grant Lassert looked at every one of those pages a million times, sent them back and forth a lot of times, and got changes that and required all 13 cities and were grateful for what he found. So I'd like to also recognize Grant.
Thank you, Larry.
That said...
how long has this process taken?
I'll let Jacob fill you in on the pain.
Like years?
We've been dealing with this for over 5 years, and I think Jacob probably could have done it shorter, because he's come here, hit the ground running. And with that, I'd like to introduce Jacob Williams, the CEO of FMPA, who is bringing something and has done a great accomplishment for us, if you agree. Thank you, Jacob.
Thank you. No problem.
Thank you, Larry.
If you could bring up the slide, that deck again, I'd be appreciate it. In answer to the question, the Vero Beach situation, is my understanding, has been going on for 10 to 12 years. And as some of us went to the state legislative rally, Grant, you were there. And our lobbyist, Bill Peoples, who many of you have met, Bill started a discussion about what went on. He said, for the first time in 12 years, there was no legislation to harm FMPA introduced at the state legislature, and that's a direct result of working on this.
Fair enough. Thank you. And by FMPA, he meant FMPA and all its members.
Members, yes. By FMPA, all the municipals in the state, because they usually cast a wide net, not a small net.
Exactly. Yeah,
wasn't it nice to go to Tallahassee and not talk about this?
Yeah. So real quick, and I know you've been through this before, and I just had a couple of updates for you. The deal stays the same that we've talked about, $108 million will be to pay. The ARP to take over their entitlements in the three projects. Nothing has changed there at all. And it was split into two buckets, $78 million for the value of the project and then $32 million for risk. We had two independent audits look at this, or reviews of this as well, by GDS and Bank of America did a review. These are the cities that have approved, and this was old by a week and a half. So the update, as of today, there are seven communities who have approved, that being Bushnell, Green Coast Springs last night, Havana, Homestead, Moorhaven last night, Ocala, and Stark last night. And so Kissimmee would be the eighth, and Keys Energy is meeting at 5 o'clock this evening going through the same process. So after today, we'll be halfway home. In getting through the 19 cities. The city of Vero Beach approved their end of the transaction yesterday morning. So we're halfway through the process. We'd like to have it wrapped up by the end of December. It looks like it's going to go into the middle of January, but we're everybody's moving through right now. The only other thing that several cities asked the question, and so we put this in, is where's the $78 million going to go? Are the $108 million going to go? How is the ARP, FMPA's ARP cities, going to use it? This is our staff proposal to the cities as to how the funds would be used. $30 million of the $108 million would be used to make sure the rates aren't any higher than they would have been if Vero Beach was in. Because one of the fundamental tenets we said was, we'll agree to have an offer to propose something to Vero Beach as long as our communities, including Kissimmee, doesn't have to pay higher electric prices because of this. So that was step one. And then the other $78 million would go to pay off debt early that the ARP has to reduce our risk in that. And we'll pay off $78 million in debt of a bond. So the question is, now that's up to the board to decide. So Larry, being your board representative, will be a part of making that decision, how the funds are used. But here's what we're proposing to the board, to how to use the funds. And with that, Larry's made the motion. And so, Stan, if you have any other questions.
Are there questions for Jake or Larry? If not, I need a motion.
Motion to approve.
I need a second.
I second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you.
And Madam Chairperson,
yes, sir.
We did recognize a lot of our employees that have put in a lot of effort on this, but not to minimize what they've done, but it is minuscule to what this gentleman right here has done since he's been here. This is something we needed to be done 10 or 12 years ago, but there was nobody that wanted to do it. He wanted to do it per our direction. He has put blood, sweat, and tears, visited each one of these cities multiple times to make it happen. You've seen them here, and I want to thank you for it, because this is something that's needed, not for ARP, but the whole utility industry in general in the state of Florida to benefit from this settlement that has caused rancor for over a decade now. Thank you very much, Jake.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, and I do want to point out one other person, because Grant likes to stick up for the attorneys, and
yes.
Our attorney, Jody Finkley,
who many
of you know. Jody worked unbelievable number of hours, 16, 18-hour days for several months, sending out emails at 1:30 in the morning and starting back at it at 5 the next morning. You know, the legal team had a lot. Grant had a lot of documents to review. So there was a large team behind all this work, but I do appreciate it, Jim.
And I want to prepare everybody for something, too. I told Jake before the meeting that the work that he's done has been phenomenal. The work that he's done and what he's accomplished so far. And I said, if, I think he is going to do it, but if he gets through all these cities, it's going to be amazingly phenomenal, because unanimity with a diverse group of cities like this is tremendously hard to achieve. But if anybody could do it, it's through the efforts that Jody and Jake have done. So, and I think it's going to get done, but it's going to be a phenomenal accomplishment.
Got some work to do yet.
Yeah.
Agreed.
But I want to prepare you. It's not done. So we may be back here saying it didn't happen because whatever, but we'll tell you. Hopefully that's not going to be the case.
Thank you, Jake.
Thank you,
Larry. And we go on to solar, which is Larry's.
Yes, I'm back again with that. This is the really smart solar. I've already shown this to you before. We went from 2 megawatts to 20 megawatts. I'm having quite the time up here tonight. Okay.
Here we go.
And the reason I'm here tonight is Jacob and the company asked if we were interested in 10 more megawatts of solar power. We've taken 20 so far. The large scale is what they're buying into, and that's why they need assistance of all the cities to go together, because we're talking 75 megawatts at a time, and that's where you save your money. It's a 20-year power purchase project, which I've told you that before, and it will be delivered by 2020. Right now, the existing binding commitment we've had that you were voted in was 20 megawatts. Now, FMPA is offering another 10 megawatts. It's still below $40 a megawatt, which, you know, 4 cents a kilowatt. And we still, because of confidentiality agreements, can't say exactly what it is, but it's, say, says substantially below there. So it's probably in between the cents there. So it's getting really close to what our avoided cost would be, otherwise what we make power for now at wholesale. So there's not a lot of risk. And here's the reason that that they're asking us to join in to do a third project. As you can see, here's all the different cities that have a commitment there. And the biggest ones, OUC, they said if you go, we put a third one in, you know, we'll go up to 110 megawatts for you know, that's where our neighbor's going. And some of the other ones that had smaller amounts before, they're at bigger amounts like you did at the previous meeting. So we've got a lot there. If you're interested to get us into the next project, it's little to no impact on us on the rates than what we've done with the 20. It's still around 1% of what our average to peak load is. So it puts you in a good position to have additional megawatts. If we've had some interest from school boards, we've had interest from over to college of possibly a deal or not. So there's interest out there that maybe we could sell, I mean, maybe we don't, but the point is it could still go into our whole system and we'll be 1% green and not at a high cost, not a lot of risk. And there's the recommendation there that we take an additional 10.
Yes. Have questions? Director
Do
Thacker?
Do we have any idea where the solar fields are going to be?
We know where one is going to be. Is one still going to be in Osceola County, correct? Okay, there may be two.
Right.
And one is Kenansville area. It's not going to be sitting there. 75 megawatts takes 75 football fields.
Okay.
So it's going to be in an area, you know, not sitting downtown. It's going to be sitting out where you've got some room.
But it would still be nice to have them where our ratepayers can see that we're participating in this.
And FMPA, and we've already discussed in all of our committees to get us up to here, we certainly have signage on there, not just FMPA. There's going to be signage that says, KUA, yeah. Solar's here.
Yep, yep, that's great.
I move that we approve it.
Yep, my second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the recommendation. Are there any other questions? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion passes.
Thank you very much.
Unanimously. Okay, we have no new business. I was wondering, what's Kevin doing? Okay, down to staff reports. And Mr. Kevin again.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
This is the real live version of what you just had a tutorial on.
That's
so
right.
Kevin, fill us in.
Thank you so much. It's my privilege to be back before you today. This time to go into, in some detail, the unaudited year-end financial statements. As is our custom here, we'll show you the unaudited, which are very similar to what you're going to see in January when the audited financial statements are presented to you. There will be a couple of minor adjustments with respect to some actuarial reports that will come out, but today we will focus our efforts on going through what we are prepared with today. Based on your feedback, and we had a great question in our last session about a high-level overview of how the financial statements, how we look on a given month, and the presentation that we provide you is a really good summary of the documents that you see in your monthly packet. And so I'm going to go through this tonight, and we've modified this somewhat because what we've had for a while is we thought we could make it a little more user-friendly and a little more accessible to us as financial statement users, so we're going to be doing that tonight. So the first thing I want to draw your attention to, and this gives you an idea of how we did in terms of megawatt hour sales, this compares how we did for 2016 in actuals, and you can see that on a month-to-month basis. And then this compares also in the green how we did in 2017 actuals. So you can see that we had about 1.5 million, 1.515 million in 2016 and 1.509 million in 2017. So we were a little less in terms of megawatt hour sales compared 17 to 16, but we did beat budget by a small amount as well. So we were behind last year's actuals, but we were ahead of budget. And you'll see that broken out in terms of revenue on the next few slides. Moving ahead, you see that we wanted to give you an overview of how we have managed to attain the metrics that you've laid before us while still achieving the goal in the strategic plan of achieving a positive net income while meeting all the fiscal policies set by the KUA board. And I won't go into the detail, the ones you see on the left, because you're familiar with those already, but they include things like keeping cash reserves to adequately fund our O&M, making sure that our debt service coverage ratios are in line with where they should be, and then having the designated funds at the levels that you've asked us to do as well. We were managed to do that. We also managed to achieve a positive net income. So that on the right gives you that piece of critical information and just a very quick overview of how we did for this period that we're looking at. Additionally, you've also instructed us to maintain ratings in the bottom one-third or costs within the bottom one-third of FMEA rates comparison survey, and we have been able to achieve that as we looked at that in our last hour together. You can see that we did achieve that at a 29.6% goal, and so we are happy to let you know that we've accomplished that as well. Now we go into a little bit more detail on the financial statement side. And this is on the revenue piece we'll focus on first. And again, that format that you've probably become familiar with now is we start with metered sales. And you can see that comparatively, although we were a little bit less, we were a little more in megawatt hour sales compared to budget. And that gives us a $219 million revenue budget compared to $221 actual. So we were about 1.2% ahead in terms of revenue associated with those increased sales compared to budget. The COPA that we talked to you also about in some detail, we budgeted $31 million, and we actually spent $52 million this year for the COPA. And that's about a $20 million variance. A couple of the challenges that we actually talked about earlier today as well is trying to estimate where KUA would be in those rankings so we can utilize the COPA to achieve that bottom one-third ranking. And we use the COPA for that end. And so it's a challenge when we budget because, as Charles said earlier, we're not just budgeting what we think fuel will be or consumption will be, but we also have to try to figure out where KUA's rankings will be and how we might employ the COPA to do that. And we don't, you know, you can typically see a variance there. You can see a variance there of around $20 million. I think last year you saw a comparable variance of around $26 million in that value. So a bit of a challenge to budget for that when you do the budget process. In the rate stabilization fund transfer, you can see that we had budgeted use about $1 million. This year, and we came pretty close to that. This is on the retail side. You know, we've got the two components. We budgeted and used pretty close to what we thought we would in the rate stabilization fund transfer and have a small variance there. For total operating revenues, we budgeted about $205 million, and we actually spent $188 million, received $188 million for a variance of about $17.8 million, which is largely related to the COPA. We were asked at our last time together how we fared during the storm and what our lost revenues were, and I have that number for you. Based on our calculations, our lost revenue only amounts to about $355,000. Now, there are two components to that. That's just the cost of us not being able to sell power while those lights were off or lines were down. But we also have the expense side of that, which I'll talk about in a bit, which is the cost to do the repairs. So that's just our revenues lost. But we'll talk about the repairs momentarily. Moving ahead to the fuel and purchase power section of the income statement. As Barbara, and this is exactly what you saw last hour, the demand charges were budgeted at about $77.8 million. And we actually spent about $69 for a positive variance of $8.3 million. And that largely relates to those reasons that Barbara described, where there was some movement at FMPA with the cost shifting between the demand down into the energy charge. And we also realized some savings for load efficiency. Energy charges, we had budgeted $37 million. We actually spent $42.5 million for a negative variance of about $4.8 million. Still, if you net those two together, we ended up with a positive variance in terms of our ARP costs of about $4 million or so. But then we utilized our bulk system rate stabilization. And again, this was the FMPA portion. And we talked to you last hour about $8.5 million we used in that. And that was that big drawdown you saw that we used to help offset some of those costs to fuel to our customers. And so we did have that variance. We don't typically budget for that, and that's why that's always a zero, because going into the year, it's hard to estimate what that would be. So we don't budget for that, but nonetheless, when we use it, you'll always see that as a variance. Our total fuel and purchase power then, we had budgeted about $123 million. Actual is $111, and that gives us a $12.3 million positive variance. And then operating revenue less the fuel and purchase power, $82 million. We actually achieved $76 million in the net, and then we had so that would give us a negative variance of about $5.4 million. Departmental O&M, I'm proud to say that each department did really well comparatively with respect to budget. Included in these costs are this costs associated with the storm to this point that we've received. So when we got those mutual aid invoices, when we had crews out, we started getting those invoices in our accounting requires us to put those in the year that we incurred them, and so the storm came in through 9/11, 9/13, and so those charges have come in. And one of the departments that got hit a little hard, as you could expect, would be the E&O group, and they ended up with a negative variance of about $1.2 million. The vast majority of those costs related to the storm. In customer service, a sizable positive variance, and that's largely related to savings through their positions and through their labor costs associated with positions that were not filled and through attrition throughout the year. And that gives us a net operating revenue. We had expected about $47 million. We came in at $42 million, and that gives us a negative variance of about $4.1 million. On the other operating expenses component, you see we came in fairly close to budget on all those items, so I won't go into a lot of detail there, but our interest expense was where we expected it to be. Our debt service were about where we thought they would be. And so our change in net position, which is that net income number we talked about, we had budgeted about $20 million. We actually came in a little bit less, $16.5 million, not bad, for a variance of about $3.9 million under where we expected to be at this time. And I wanted to share with you the cost that we had calculated for the storm at this point, because it's reflected in the different O&Ms of the departments. The total costs at this point are about $1.5 million. Now, we do have our meeting with FEMA next week to begin the process of trying to recoup some of those monies. We'll keep you posted on how that unfolds, but that's where we are in terms of total cost to the utility at this point. And that's through the end of the fiscal year, through 9/30. This is our investment portfolio breakdown, which is a sort of a quick snapshot of how we've invested the proceeds and the investments of KUA. The biggest part of that is at the SPA, which is a State Board of Administration. And those are very short-term investments. We try to manage our liquidity. As you can see, our total portfolio of about $132 million. We don't, and you'll see on the next slide, you know, we typically manage our funds to manage liquidity. So we invest to manage liquidity, to provide the funds that we need for the utility. We're not trying to maximize return, because as you look here, you'll see that our effective return over the year was about 1.09%. Well, you might say, well, man, the stock market's returning 15%. Well, that's good, but those investment vehicles are outside the scope of what we typically invest KUA's monies, so that we might have the stability for those funds and liquidity when they provide. We tend to invest on the short term of the yield curve so that we can take those monies out and use them as we need them to pay bills. So our goal isn't to maximize return, but it's to make sure we have enough money to pay the bills of KUA. And again, to that point, the majority of our portfolio matures within this year, so about 0.70 or a bit less than a year of the weighting of how we've invested most of our funds here at KUA. Now, we want to do something a little bit different here. One of the things that KUA does is within the finance department, we also house the divisions of materials management or warehouse and fleet management. And so we thought, rather than just bore you with numbers every time, we thought we'd give you some insight into what those other two divisions do for the customers of KUA. Neil Bevel is here tonight, and he's the manager of the fleet group. And he actually, as anecdotal piece of information, Neil is always working on managing costs within that department, as you would expect. And during the storm, we had a group in Puerto Rico. And do you remember they were down there? We had a piece of equipment that didn't work. And so Neil calculated that it'd be cheaper for him to go down there one day, fix it, and come back than to pay to have it fixed down there. So we ended up saving, it's like maybe $6,000-$7,000, I think, wasn't it, Neil, to get that fixed. And so Neil was gracious enough to go down there and come back, which I thought was a nice thing to do. But if you can look and see here, we have about 110 small trucks and SUVs and cars, and that comprises the majority of our fleet here at KUA. And those are the vehicles that go out into the field and work with customers directly. The next biggest block is trailers, forks, and lifts, and generators, and all those things that have motors, but those are things that Neil's group also manages. And we have about 81 of those items. We also have bucket trucks, of which you purchased one tonight, so we'll have 21 after the action this evening. We have bucket trucks, and as you could imagine, the bucket trucks, a substantial cost at each. I think each cost, the last one we looked at tonight, was about $230,000, $240,000. So a big investment for us, but a long-term payoff, and Neil's group makes sure that those are on the road. Yes, ma'am.
Let me ask a question. We bought a new one. Do we have some that are going to go out of service because of their age?
I believe we do. We tend to rotate those out. Isn't that correct, Neil?
Every 15 years for the large ones, yes.
Neil's group does a really good job of, they have pieces of equipment that they check on every vehicle every time it comes in, and meticulously making sure those things are maintained so that we can extract all the value out of them that we can. But we do rotate them out. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
And then our last group is large trucks, and that's everything that's not a bucket and not a small truck. I think the weight on that, is that over 5,000 pounds, Neil, or 10,000 for the large trucks?
Those are usually around 24,000.
Okay, so even bigger than that. And those things have the flatbeds on them, and they're also used to move equipment from place to place and out into the field whenever they're needed by crews working. And then finally, the last slide I'll share with you this evening. Wanted to give you an idea of the magnitude of the fuel that it takes to run that type of a fleet. Our average monthly cost is around $19,000 for fuel, and that includes both our unleaded and our diesel. The last little bump you can see in September, as you could imagine, also related to the storm when we had crews out in the field doing extra work. And then a total cost on annual fuel of around $228,000 for the utility. And that's obviously in the service of our customers to keep those trucks out in the field and keep our lights on. And that's all I have for financials. Happy to answer any questions for you.
Any questions?
But I like that slide. That was a great slide on the equipment.
Thank you.
That was good. That was good you included that.
Thank you, sir.
Any other questions? It was a great report. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. We are now at item K. Hear the attorney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and board members. Just a couple things real quick. In terms of this FMPA transaction, I have to compliment, like Larry and Jim did, both Jacob and Jody for the job they did. Jody made it a lot easier to review all those many pages of documents because of how it was organized and how well it was drafted. On the second thing, if you've been following the news, you may see that the House and Senate are working in conference on the latest version of the tax reform bill. Unfortunately, both the Senate and the House bills already include the repeal of advance refunding. Advance refunding is used by entities like KUA or FMPA or other municipal or local government entities to take advantage of changes in the interest rate market. So if you have bonds that are normally callable in a given year, before this law, well, it's not a law yet, before this tax reform bill, at least once you could refund them before they're called, well before their call date, and take advantage of the change in interest rates. Well, if this bill is reconciled and becomes law with the repeal of advance refunding, we won't be able to do that anymore. Now, KUA is going to be debt-free next year, so that's not as big an impact on us. But FMPA won't be, and it's going to limit the ability of FMPA to take advantage of changes in interest rates. It also looks like interest rates might go up, so again, the impact may be minimal short term. But it's an unfortunate loss of a great tool to save people money. On the silver lining, it is Christmas time, or the season anyhow. The silver lining is that we are going to continue to be able to issue tax exempt debt. It's just we're not going to be able to refund it well in advance of its call date. And other than that, I wish everyone season's greetings and a prosperous new year. Thank you.
All right.
Yes, you have before you the reminders that was also sent out to you, and the newest one being on there, the annual Chamber of Commerce dinner meeting on the 27th of next month. The only other thing I have is that I wanted to let you know that the annual Christmas parade is Saturday night, December 9th, here in Kissimmee. And for the first time ever, the Grand Marshal of that parade has been selected as a group of six, the six KUA employees that were down in Puerto Rico.
Oh, how wonderful.
And I think that's a tremendous tribute to their work, and so it's fantastic. So. And Madam Chairman, I'd like to wish you and every other board member a tremendous Christmas, a Merry Christmas, and a very healthy New Year's and a very prosperous year in 2018.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Director Hemphill? Nothing? Director Thacker?
Just Merry Christmas.
Gervina?
Same. Feliz Navidad, everybody.
Feliz Navidad.
Feliz Navidad. Y espero año nuevo.
Yeah, same thing. And thanks, Kevin, and the staff for the work you've done throughout the whole year, not only today, but throughout the whole year. Really, really appreciate that. Makes what we do up here a lot easier. So, thank you.
Yes, I want to thank the whole team, and like Director Ortega said, you do so much to make it easy for us to understand, and I know that it's probably difficult for you to bring it down to our level when you work with these all the time, but I think we all appreciate the fact that helping us understand the large numbers and the complicity of what you do. And thank you so much. And I'd like to, again, the Puerto Rico linemen, I want to recognize them for what they did and how they worked in Puerto Rico and how they represented KUA. I'm very proud of what they did. The EOC party was great. Thank you so much for that. And Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. And Happy Hanukkah.
Okay.
Can't forget that, too. And with that, meeting is adjourned.